Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. This is the Progressive Commentary Hour. Today, an in-depth discussion about how President Trump is seriously incoherent on his world and domestic views. Now we must separate out all the rhetoric, all the promises, all the condemnations, all the attacks that he leveled against others and those leveled against him, and take a look at what is the likely outcome of his presidency. One of the reasons that I had advocated people look at third-party candidates, build 30 third-party coalitions, was because in other countries, like in Greece, for example, you have multiple parties. But that's true throughout the world, unless you're an absolute monarchy like Saudi Arabia or Kuwait. Now, they may have some governing body, but it has no power. But in the United States, we have given an inordinate amount of power to the president. The problem is it's not just a president we're electing. We're also electing those people who help get him elected or her elected. I have gone into great depth about Hillary Clinton. I have talked about her background. I have given you example after example, dozens of individuals who were involved in law enforcement with respected backgrounds and reputations who found compelling, overwhelming evidence of her criminal wrongdoing and her husband when they were in Arkansas as governor and, again, as attorney general. That didn't change when she came to Washington. In fact, she was able to bring those who had been involved in her criminal activity, like Les Hubble, who ran the Rose Law Firm where she worked, to Washington with her. He would later end up going to prison for things he did in overbilling at the Rose Law Firm. When you take a look at the power of the president, just in the White House alone, there are about 4,000 employees. Now, of course, they don't all work in the White House, but they're attached to the White House. Then you start looking at all the different departments and agencies of government. It's not just one person who becomes the head of the FDA or the director of the CIA, but instead they bring a small army of technocrats with them, and they implement the policy that the political leaders have shared with the person who was hired to get the job done. So when I took a careful look, at the people surrounding the Clintons and Obama, one and the same people, by the way, I saw that what was missing, at least from my personal perspective, were bringing progressive minds, the very minds that you hear on a regular basis, on our Conversations with the Remarkable Mind series, on the Progressive Commentary Hour, these kind of minds, people with a large worldview, people with deep experience, but to a person they have been excluded from consideration, even though we, through each administration, have advocated on their behalf as consultants, advisors, or department heads. Now, why? Why would someone who is so loved and so respected, who has been so correct historically on all their major views on the environment or on health or on, let's say, finance, like a Michael Hudson, why would they not be invited in? It's simple. Because if you've invited in 15 people to be on your Council of Economic Advisors, all Wall Street people, headed by Larry Summers, both in the Clinton administration and the Obama administration, and you have an outsider who, first of all, sees how things really work, who's likely to be the point person, who do they represent when they're advocating for something, if they're advocating the takeover of Iraq or Afghanistan or Libya or Syria? Who's behind them? What industries would benefit? How are they associated with those industries? What foundations or think tanks are they advocating on behalf of? And then you start to see, my God, it's all a game. The public loses, they win. And so when we saw that Clinton would have made no change whatsoever to anything that's important, none. Women would not have benefited. Women of color would not have benefited. People of color would have had greater incarceration. She would not change the war on drugs. She would not legalize marijuana. She advocated for vaccine, mandatory vaccination. She would not challenge the high prices of drugs from Big Pharma. She would continue the hundreds of billions of dollars a year in tax breaks and subsidies to the major oil cartels, gas fracking cartels, nuclear cartels. She would have given lip service and a little token gesture towards renewables like wave power, which I'm sure she's not even aware of. Solar, yes, and wind, yes, but certainly not geothermal. And we have an awful lot of hot springs in America that could completely heat major cities. That would receive nothing. Big issues such as employment, there was nothing in her plan that would have brought work back to inner cities or to the previously depressed states where they had been gutted. To the contrary, her closest advisors and friends, hedge fund managers and equity partners, would have continued outsourcing jobs to other countries. We know from her record and from WikiLeaks that she was an advocate of the Trans-Pacific Partnership and the TTIP. She was one of the architects and sellers of NAFTA and CAFTA and supporters of World Trade Organization. She was anti-union, and yet she would smile and have lunch with union leaders as if that somehow that showed that she had union stripes. She does not. She's anti-labor. So if you thought for a moment anything would have been better, nuclear, she has control over nuclear. Big, big, big mistake there, because she is the most super hawkish Secretary of State in American history, even more than Alan Dulles or his brother. She also would have given the green light for Israel to have nuked Iran, setting off an entire Middle East tinderbox with incredible consequences. Now, if you own stock in oil companies, you would make a fortune, because when you start bombing the Straits of Hormuz and you can't get the oil out of the Middle East, the price of oil that is out in the market, that's coming from Canada or Venezuela or other places, would skyrocket, $200, $300 a barrel. And then when Saudi Arabia and Kuwait and United Arab have their oil fields bombed, or cyber warfare turning off the electricity in those countries, or in the United States, none of the people in power would take responsibility for it. So on every level, more people would be imprisoned, more people would be spied upon, more wars would occur, more regime change engaged in, more lies and propaganda, more protesters of every stripe would be targeted as domestic terrorists, more whistleblowers would be imprisoned or attacked. And she even had an idea that, though she says it was jest, if you read the actual transcript, I don't see it as jest, where she was asking in a WikiLeaks, could we send a drone in on Julian Assange? Now, whether she meant it as a joke or she was just being facetious is not the point. The point is she would have the power to do it, and she would do it if she could, because the Clintons have got away with everything, because they have an army of stay-behinds, people who have been there from previous administrations, tens of thousands of people all told, and that's why everyone lined up in support of her. All the Fortune 500 people, all of the major, including all of the major Republican backers, all of the people in the oil industry, gas industry, the sugar people, the vaccine people, the drug cartels, the pharmaceuticals, big nuclear, all were behind her. Doesn't that tell you something? The hedge fund people behind her. The equity partnerships behind her. Wall Street behind her. So I don't think you have to look very deep, though we did, to see America would not change for the better. We would go through an absolutely horrendous situation where the rich would get richer, the poor, middle class, worse. So now we come to Trump, and he deserves equal credit, even more so now. So Richard Gale is a scholar, one of our scholars in residence. He has a deep background in understanding social issues, as he's been a frontline producer on many of the important documentaries that we've done, the War on Health, Prescription for Disaster, the Drugging of Our Children, one most important one to date on nuclear energy and its dangers, knocking on the devil's door, as well as holding symposium where some of the world leading thinkers come in and discuss their points of view. So we began to do research on the people being invited either to have a position or be an ongoing advisor, a consultant. Now, the trouble is with a consultant or advisor, they don't have to register. They don't have to require any confirmations. So therefore, they're there at will. For example, did anyone in this audience know that that the insurance industry had over 100 visits to the White House where they were writing, they were sponsoring Obamacare? No, we didn't. Would it have changed our outlook if we knew it was purely there to make them $1 trillion a year, which it has, with all of their administration fees, which actually are a form of profit to them, and also their ability to deny coverage of legitimate diseases or medical emergencies, and they say, no, we're not covering it, causing bankruptcy. We would have had a different perspective. We also found out that one of the people who was involved in undermining Trump had had over 140 visits in the White House, many with the president. But when you are not an officially appointed person, you're not a cabinet member, you can get away with this. You're in the shadow government. You're one of the hidden hands behind the scene. So now we're going to show you not just the people who are most likely to be in a position of power, but those who will be even more powerful because they are not required to testify. They're not required to give any background on themselves. They are simply a gigantic network of people who are, will work at the president or special interest request. Let's begin by first saying hello to Richard Gales on the line. Hi, Richard.
Yes, good evening, Gary.
Let's start with Michael Pence, the former Republican governor of Indiana. Trump has said he would put Pence in charge of domestic and foreign policy so he could focus on making America great again. Well, that is unusual. The only person that's ever come close to doing that would have been FDR with one of his vice presidents, one of the most famous, who was actually a socialist. But here's what we know about Mike Pence. So what we know about him, we're not speculating now, unless he goes forth and has one of those epiphanies and says, I'm changing, we can see more of the same coming. Oh, Richard?
Yeah, I was just going through all the lists with you as you were repeating it. And what we're going to discover is as we go through all, many of these other candidates that are coming up and the nominees, those that have been nominated, those that have already accepted their nomination, and those that are pending, this pattern is just repeated throughout. They're all from the same cookie cutter, unfortunately, and but there is certain. We'll be observing that Trump is going to be bringing in many more from the corporate world as well, and perhaps some of his billionaire friends too.
Almost all corporate.
Right. But the one thing with Pence is, and what some analysts have been saying, is that he's a little more safe bet for the GOP legislature in both chambers. Because he is more lockstep with a lot of the majority of the Republicans. So in the event that anything happens with Trump or there is a revolt against him or a coup against him within the party, they've got somebody who's a perfect walk-in to replace him and who will do their bidding.
Well, I believe that Donald Trump won't make it 2 years. I believe that he'll be either be impeached or he'll be embarrassed to a point because of his dealings. I believe that with his family and the millennial generation that are his children, they have no sense of empathy. They are completely mercenary. His own daughter ends up trying to hawk the $10,000 bracelet she was wearing on her show, her television show, cable show, where she sells stuff, just 2 days after she appeared on 60 Minutes. So these people have been raised with a sense of entitlement, raised with a sense that there's that everything in the world and everyone is there to serve them. When he has two sons who are so tone deaf that they go to Africa and kill with high-powered rifles completely innocent animals on game preserves, What kind of person would kill an animal? What is deficient in their personalities? There is no sense of spirituality or moral ethics anywhere I can see in anyone representing Trump. So I don't believe that you're going to have to fight Trump. I don't believe that you're going to have to hold out against him. I believe that this man is fully capable of destroying himself. And I believe that that's when Pence will step in, and I believe you're correct. Then we have, for the Secretary of Defense, many different names, but one of them is General James Mattis, retired Major General. Not a terrible choice, but he was called Mad Dog during the Battle of Fallujah in Iraq for saying, quote, "It's fun to shoot some people." Really? Which people? Would that be people of color? Because they're not Caucasian there. Would that be people of a different religion? They're different. They're Muslims. Would that be people who are lower economic class? Which exact people do you find is fun to shoot? So when I hear someone feels it's fun to shoot people, that concerns me. Also, he's known as a warrior. He's never married, constantly studies warfare, and keeps a copy of Marcus Aurelius's Meditations on his person during all deployments. He has a lot of support from the military for Secretary of Defense. And one criticism among politicians is that he fails to hold any articulated plans for weighty issues and speaks in platitudes. And he must have been eavesdropping on the last 8 years of Barack Obama. And he couldn't have been eavesdropping on George Bush, because Bush couldn't spell platitudes, so he would never pronounce it. But he's highly regarded by both parties for his combat leadership. Gee whiz, then we have a General Custer who is commended for his battleship leadership. That is not the kind of person you want in this position. Yet he's more moderate than General Flynn, less militant against Iran, and would keep Iran nuclear deal. Then you have Tom Cotton, who is at 37, from Arkansas, the youngest member of the Senate. He's been called the Ted Cruz with a war record, Sarah Palin with a Harvard degree, and Chris Christie with a Southern accent. And he opposes the nuclear deal with Iran, and he and 46 GOP colleagues went behind Obama's back to threaten Iran. In a letter, they would reverse the deal in violation of the Logan Act, a law forbidding unauthorized persons with negotiating foreign policy with other governments. And he requested Congress to supply B-52s and bunker busters for Israel to attack Iran. And he said that the U.S. should be proud of how it treats savages at Guantanamo. Well, were they savages because they were put there? And as we would later find out, they were sold. There was a bounty, and warlords could get thousands of dollars for turning in so-called terrorists. So they just made up lists. These people were all terrorists. They were not. They were just common people. And because there was absolutely zero proof they committed any crime, 95% of them, they were there unlawfully. So I'm just curious, Tom, are you saying that the people are savages because they're illegally detained with no human rights at Guantanamo, or because they've been convicted of crimes? And now, if they've been convicted of crimes that shows that those were savage crimes, fine, call them what you want. Well, then name me how many of those were convicted. Because if you're accusing someone who's never had a trial, never had their day in court, never met their accuser, don't know what they're being held for, and you're calling them a savage, that tells us a great deal about you and Arkansas for electing you. But that didn't surprise me. And he also wants to fill Guantanamo's empty beds with Muslims. Which Muslims are you interested in? Now, Richard, who would be some Muslims throughout history that he could have suggested today, if they were alive today, he would fill the beds, and Congress would go right along with it, that most of the media would go along with it, certainly Fox would go along with it. Some would actually become erotically aroused to know that there were Muslims right. being put in. You know, they're easily aroused at Fox News. So tell us, as a scholar, tell us some of the Muslim
history. Oh, there were so many, because when we look back in the golden era of Baghdad, it was the height of almost world civilization in the and that would have been the 11th century, 10th and 11th centuries. It was the height of sciences. These were the guys that were the master map makers of the planet. They, you might even remember the. Anybody saw that film, The Name of the Rose, with Sean Connery, and nobody's seen glasses before, spectacles. Well, it was the Muslim scientists that created the first spectacles because of their mastery and into vision and optics and astronomy, and we would not even know of Aristotle or the works of Galen in medicine or Hippocrates or Plato, even for that matter, if it wasn't for the Muslims having translated all the Greek texts into Arabic, and then which were later retranslated into Greek and into Latin when there was the start of some kind of a sign of intelligence emerging in Europe during the Renaissance. So, there were so many. Ibn al-Arabi comes to mind, and al-Ghazali, who's the first real historian of civilization. Ibn Taya, he was a Persian. In fact, the Iranians to this day are considered the scholars in the study and history of civilizations and how they emerge, and the cultural, economic, militaristic conditions that give rise to civilizations. And this was a discipline that the Iranians had, their early Persians had been engaged in since the 11th, 12th centuries. So. There were many, because we might remember that the Middle East and Arab culture and Persian culture was at its height when Europe was in its dark ages. So,
and there was one very famous Persian Muslim who believed in the sciences and supported the arts. His name started with an S. You remember who he was?
Oh, there was Saladin.
Yes. So you see, there would not be enough jail cells in Guantanamo and every prison in the United States if you took every single person out and just put Muslims throughout history who contributed to the betterment of all life and people. You wouldn't have enough cells. So before you say that you'd like to see more Muslims in prison, be very specific. Otherwise, that's Islamophobia. Also, you called Tom Cotton. You called Israel invasion of Gaza in 2014, quote, the most moral humanitarian fighting force in the world, end quote. What if you were there and were one of the parents of the over 500 children who were slaughtered, or over the 600 women who were slaughtered, or the more than 400 older men who were slaughtered, or the 10,000 homes who were slaughtered, and who today don't have electricity and don't have drinking water, and whose fields have been confiscated, their olive orchards taken down. The largest single outdoor prison in the world is Gaza. And, of course, then we have to include the West Bank. So do you have any knowledge of Palestine? Do you have any knowledge of how Palestinians and Jews used to live in peace and harmony together, were neighbors and friends who thought well of each other? Do you have any understanding at all of history? Tom Cotton from Arkansas, or is that a requirement in Arkansas that you come to Washington being a functionally illiterate person and insensitive? Because we had a lot of those people coming. And shame on Arkansas for voting you into power. So if you become a powerful person, if you become Secretary of Defense, then we're in trouble. Now, Richard, think of it this way. Pence, the Vice President, Donald Trump, Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, all of the powerful people, and currently almost all of our Congress, believe that Israel can do no wrong. They give all those billions of dollars, the largest giveaway in American foreign policy history. And yet where people are in need of better schools, or any schools in some ghetto areas, where we have homeless people in America, we have children, 18 million hungry children, So isn't there an irony that we won't feed our own families, we won't give money to Americans in need or build them something to help them, yet we give it to Israel and then we'll never challenge Israel? And then knowing our National Security Agency knew that Israel had a malware that would not just destroy the centrifuges of the Iranian nuclear facility, even though the International Atomic Energy Commission showed with cameras in every single location, in every single nuclear facility, with lock boxes on every single one of the machines, and only the International Atomic Energy Commission's scientists on a regular basis going there and personally inspecting if they were not engaged in any making of fissionable material that would create a nuclear weapon, that they did a second malware, one that would turn off all the electricity in Iran. And what in the world could be the motive of turning off all the electricity in a country unless you planned on making that 1,300-mile flight and dropping nuclear weapons on them, knowing that we would support them, knowing that there would be people who would love to see Iran destroyed, even though there are 84 million people. In fact, I would dare say that there are more young, educated people in Iran than there are young, educated people in the United States. The difference is they actually have a knowledge of the world. There's a great deal of theocracy there, which I'm opposed to, but we don't understand that out of 84 million people living in Iran, twice the size of Iraq, that there's an awful lot of young people because America supported the eight-year war with Iran and Iraq, where we led the intelligence of Saddam Hussein in killing their fathers and martyred them. So they grew up without fathers, yet they still went to school. They're not against America. They're not anti-secularism. Those in power are, but they're a relatively small bunch compared to the rest of them. So are you putting everyone in one basket to condemn them because they're Muslims, because they're Iranians? When was the last time Iran invaded another country? And then when was the last time that America engaged in unseating with regime change Mossadegh in 1953 in Iran and installing the Shah of Iran? Then how many people did the Shah of Iran kill, torture, murder with full American support until he was ousted? There's just this bizarre disconnect, this cognitive disconnect in America and especially American youth when it comes to understanding the world we live in, the people around us. Would you address this, please, Richard?
Well, the one thing is, I think, is that Iran, I think listeners need to understand this tension that's always existed between Sunnis and Shias. And this is aside from American and Western geopolitical interests that like to, kind of throw little hand grenades between the two to keep the two in constant tension. But the Shias, the Iranian Shias, have always been a persecuted minority. And where you go in any Arab Sunni country, they are silenced, they're persecuted. Countries like Pakistan and where Shia mosques are not even permitted. So they have to kind of pretend to be Sunnis. The same is the case in Saudi Arabia. For many of them who are more fearful of the Saudi regime. And so what is being called as Shiite terrorist groups like Hezbollah, being probably the best known one, is in a sense is really more – they're more like defenders of the faith. You don't see Hezbollah, unlike al-Qaeda, trying to go beyond the borders of Syria or Lebanon to infiltrate other parts of the Arab world. They primarily are there to protect the holy places that are the sites that are holy to the Shias, and there are many, many of them in Syria and Iraq. But we have kind of just thrown them into this terrorist box. Although they are militant, but no more so than our own soldiers are militant. So they're protecting their own interests, and it's that kind of a tribal mindset where if you do something to us, we're going to retaliate, and that's what they do. So when they're threatened and by Sunni groups or by a group Al Qaeda group or a Salafi Sunni organization, they will retaliate, and they'll retaliate with what we can call terrorist means. So no. And I think that's so. So much of the demonization of Iran, because we always hear the demonization of Iran being framed in the context of their supporting terrorists. But then what terrorists are they supporting? Well, they're supporting these kind of regional terrorist groups like Hezbollah, who don't have like a large global presence or even a strong Middle Eastern presence. They're usually located where you find Shiite communities.
The issue is that we're not demanding that Israel come together and actually seek a peaceful settlement with the Palestinian people. And until we demand that and withhold support, there won't be any. Now, I'm going to go through some of these names very quickly. So we also could add into there that he opposes food stamps and calls food stamp recipients addicts and wants to cut welfare programs. And then he opposes women's rights, including the Violence Against Women Act. So, boy, Arkansas, did you choose a good one there. But then again, Donald Trump's interviewed him. Now, then we have former Senator John Kyle from Arizona. And now he co-chaired the Enterprise Institute and was senior counsel at Covington and Burlington, the law firm of Eric Holder's revolving door as Obama's attorney general. And he is regarded as the most conservative in the Senate chamber. And he is an unwavering supporter of Dick Cheney. He works with Senator Lieberman on the American Internationalism Project, which promotes U.S. global hegemony. He's an advocate for presidential secrecy from Congress and the public. He opposes the free press. He opposes legal shields for reporters and journalists. He opposes congressional and FISA oversight of the National Security Agency. He opposes amnesty for would-be immigrants in conflict areas. And he supports a regime change in Iran. He favors military aggression against Russia and expanding our nuclear weapons and opposing Obama's attempt at a new START arms control treaty. He was responsible for the Senate for $84 billion in funding for the nuclear arsenal. And he holds evangelical views on women's health rights. And most of his campaign contributions came from defense contractors. We found Lockheed, Bechtel, Raytheon, General Dynamics, Northrop Grumman, Halliburton, and Occidental Petroleum. Then we see Jim Talent, a senior fellow at the Neocon American Free Enterprise Institute. He was a member of Ted Cruz's foreign policy team. That should tell you a lot. And he's aligned more with the likes of John Bolton on foreign policy, meaning a super hawk. He's a neocon supporter of Israel. Now, for the National Security Advisor, you have Lieutenant General Michael Flynn, who's accepted. And that is problematic because he is very belligerent. He's not subject, by the way, to Senate approval. He supports waterboarding and much worse. He wants to keep Guantanamo open indefinitely. And he supports killing terrorist families, all members of a terrorist family. He supports Trump's extreme vetting of Muslims entering the country. He's a harsh enemy of Russia. So we know how that's going to go down. And then we have for Secretary of the Treasury, we have Jeb Hensarling, a Republican of Texas. He's been called the GOP's most popular nobody. He is a person who he won to repeal Obamacare. That's not bad. That's actually good. But they're not going to put something better in its place at this moment. We have to demand that. And he wanted to terminate the federal home affordable mortgage program. He opposed bankruptcy modifications that would have included mortgage foreclosures. He voted against many of the things that other people felt were important. He wants to make the Patriot Act permanent. He wants to extend wiretapping. and he wants a constitutional ban on same-sex marriage. He has not a good record when it comes to women. And then I'll go through some of the others. We have Jamie Dimon. Now, I don't think he'll be taken into a position, but I do believe he'll be there in lots of consulting. He's the CEO of J.P. Morgan, and he is a big supporter of all Trump deals and all trade deals. He's one of those people who believes that the government is best served when it's served its marching orders by big business. Carl Icahn is chairman of Icahn Enterprises, and he's one of the world's wealthiest men. And I don't believe any of these hedge fund people or equity partners should be in any position of government. Now, head of the CIA is Mike Pompeo, and he's accepted Trump's position. He received more donations from Koch brothers than any other candidate. He favors expansion and more robust surveillance on American citizens. He supports waterboarding and, quote, a hell of a lot worse than waterboarding, whatever that means. He called those doing the tortured Abu Ghraib patriots. Okay, which? Now, here's, Richard, something I'm confused about. Which part of that makes you a patriot? Sticking dogs on blindfolded people when they're naked to have their genitalia ripped out by the attack dogs? Having a whole bunch of naked Muslim men lay in a pile and you can get on top of them? I'm not sure which of those is patriotic. Maybe should be more detailed on that. He believes in expanding Guantanamo as a CIA prison, and he opposes Iran nuclear deal. He favors rapid expansion of our nuclear weapons program. He's called for the execution of Edward Snowden. Now, mind you, this would be the head of the CIA. He would have the power to execute Snowden. And he's really hard on Putin. And he's a big supporter of genetically modified foods and banning all GMO labeling.
And he comes from Kansas, so he, you know, which is an agricultural state, so that's where he is.
And then one of the most important people you could have is Attorney General. And here we have Jess Sessions, Republican from Alabama, and he would be responsible for the division ruling, on the All Civil Rights that investigates police abuse. And Reagan had nominated him for a federal judge position, but he was torpedoed because of his outspoken racism. As Alabama's attorney general, he launched a witch hunt against civil rights workers. In a GOP-controlled Congress, he was rejected from the Judiciary Committee, which is rare because of his history of racism. He is an anti-immigration extremist and has been for over a decade. He opposes the Constitution's guarantee of citizenship if born in the United States. He stated that all Muslims should be banned from the United States. He opposes judges who have a secular and not a Christian mindset. He denies climate change is real. He is a radical electronic communications person in that he only wants the government to control everything and not the free market or the people. He argues that every immigrant is a drain on the economy, and he wants to reverse all legal marijuana legislation. Therefore, there'd be no marijuana allowed in the United States. He wants to increase the military budget by $55 billion and add 70,000 new troops. He opposes gay marriage and gays in the military. He's called the ACLU and the NAACP communist, non-American. He once liked the KKK, but I guess he's changed his mind. Then you have the White House chief strategist. Now, this guy is a banana, this Steve Bannon. The late Andrew Breitbart founded Breitbart News, reactionary, right-wing, white supremacist media operation with a reputation for including fear against African-Americans and Latinos and Muslims and immigrants. And that's who he's putting in this position, a very powerful position. So that is not cool. Secretary of State, undecided, but he was talking with Mitt Romney. And whether he used Mitt Romney for that position or another, keep in mind, how did Mitt Romney make his money? He made it as an equity partner. He also interviewed Henry Kravitz for Secretary of the Treasury. Now, I doubt the Kravitz would take it, But let me just explain this. Here's how it works. When a group of people get together, and let's say you're running a good company, you've done really well, your company has no debt, and it's making a nice profit. They come in, and they make you a deal. If you're a private company, they make you a deal to buy you out. They give you a nice chunk of change up front. But let's say that they buy you out for $10 million. Then they might go to the bank and say, we want $20 million. So the bank's going to get unrestricted stock and about a 10% upfront fee in this. So the bank gives you $20 million. You take $10 million and you put that as your profit. And then now the company is saddled with $20 million in debt. So to pay its bills and service its debt load, it has to lay off employees. And this lasts for about 3 or 4 years. And then the company finally is struggling so much because every time there's any profit made, the equity partners take out that money for themselves. So it'll never get out of debt. And we've had thousands upon thousands of American companies making good products and well-run companies, but until they got taken over by these equity partners. Now the one thing that's valuable is the trademark. So they take your trademark and they take that to China and they make the product over there for a lot less, bring it back in the United States, close down the factory, and they walk away from it. So when it comes to Mitt Romney should not be considered for any position. Why? Because he made his $250 million-plus fortune by loading up companies with debt, extracting million-dollar fees from the same companies, and then they went broke. He would be the Gordon Gekko, the Wall Street greed merchant. Let me give you specifics. Bain Capital, that Romney was a senior partner in, KB Toys, 3,500 employees gone. Data International, 1,700. And yet Bain got $242 million from that company. DDI Corporation, 300 jobs lost. But Bain got $170 million. GS Industries, Romney personally earned $12 million, but 750 people lost their jobs. And there's a lot more. Thousands of people lost their jobs from Mitt Romney. Mitt Romney and Bain Capital, one of the reasons there's a lot of Rust Belt empty places around the United States now. But then Henry Kravitz, he's a much bigger tiger than these guys. He's ranked 108th in the world with $4.8 billion. And he was featured in the film Barbarians at the Gate on leveraged buyouts. And he's a major GOP contributor. It tells you a lot when he is a trustee on the Council on Foreign Relations. He was an executive committee member of the Business Council till 2014. And with TXU, 7,200 workers lost their job. With HCA, the largest hospital chain, 191,000 employees lost their job. With Hera Entertainment, 30,400 employees lost their job. With Clear Channel, 31,000 employees lost their job. With First Data, 27,000 employees lost their job. With Kinder Morgan, 8,400 employees lost their job. With Georgia Pacific, a paper company taken over by Coke, 55,000 employees lost their job. In fact, job losses from four buyouts alone by Bain Capital with Romney at the helm were in the thousands. But these people, it's in the hundreds of thousands. So let's get this right. You're going to bring someone in who potentially, if not Secretary of the Treasury, would be guiding you on how to make your decisions. And he's caused over 500,000 people or thereabouts to lose their jobs and not a single thought about the consequences of them, their families, the homes that they would have lost, being thrown out on the street. And this is the quality of the person that Obama is surrounding himself with. Richard Haass, a president of the Council on Foreign Relations for 14 years, and former director of policy planning for the State Department under Bush. And he's been considered. He has a terrible reputation. John Bolton, he was considered also. He chaired the neocon pro-Israel Gatestone Institute, senior fellow at the American Enterprise Institute, former Byrd member of the Project for the New American Century. He earned a reputation as a notorious foreign policy hawk and one of the first hardline neocons to endorse Trump at the start. And he doesn't like Iran, but he loves Israel, and he doesn't like Russia, and he supports NATO. Wonder how that would go. And then you got Rudy Giuliani, Newt Gingrich, and a Richard Armitage, and he was a former Deputy Secretary of State. So when you take a look at these people that they've got up there, these are all neocons. These are super one-worlders. These are the people that could have the power of strategies, an enormous army of consultants from their previous companies that they came from. Because remember, they're coming in from a private organization to run that agency and then go back into that same position, just like the Attorney General Eric Holder did. So they had the full resources of that law firm they came from. So then Secretary of Energy, you have Harold Hamm, an energy billionaire, 34th richest person in the world, and he would be the nation's first Secretary of Energy directly tied to oil industry, and he holds the record for the most costliest divorce in U.S. history, but he is pro-old oil, not new renewables. Then director of the EPA, Myron Ebell, he gives advice to Steve Bannon at Breitbart, and his think tanks take a lot of money from oil and gas industry, especially ExxonMobil. Over half of his $3.7 million budget comes from Exxon. He's a staunch opponent of all international treaties. He's a fanatic climate change denier. So how are you going to have someone over the EPA who denies climate change? He opposes warning schools when pesticides will be sprayed around them. He doesn't believe pesticides are dangerous. And over at Health and Human Services, they're considering Representative Tom Price. And you look at a strong climate change denier, and yet 700 miles of his state's coastline, which is Georgia, is highly vulnerable to sea level rise. So he believes in that. Then you got Bobby Jindal, former governor of Louisiana, I wouldn't even go into his background. It's so miserable. And Michael McCaul from Texas, Secretary of Homeland Security. And these people believe in the Patriot Act. They believe in interrogations, enhanced interrogations. They don't want any oversight by the CIA. They don't want anyone to be able to tell them what to do. They oppose civil oversight of all intelligence gathering. They want to do what they want to do in secret, and too bad for you. So those are some of the people who are being interviewed, either as consultants, advisors, or for cabinet positions. So if we're not aware of this, if we're not aware of these people and their connections, and their ideologies, and their business connections, then what's going to happen when Trump is doing his work on a daily basis, and these are the people carrying out those mandates, and their legions of supporters that they're bringing with them, the technocrats. So you'll have tens of thousands of people who are in the pocket of big business, major corporations, all pro-Israel, anti-Muslim, anti-environmental protection, pro-big pharma, pro-the American diet, and pro what they control, and anti-anything progressive or human rights. So, now remember this, because what you choose to stay intentionally ignorant on, sooner or later, we'll be there to meet you when bad choices are made in your name. Final thoughts, Richard?
Well, I think we will be doing in the future. We're going to be we'll be keeping up on the appointments as they're made, and we haven't gotten to many other positions. There's the Secretary of the Interior, Secretary of Education. Also, commerce, which is a very important one, and there you have a couple more of the multimillionaires running for that one. So I think what we should do in the future is just continue updating this and keeping people informed, so that and that's the most important thing, because the average American isn't even familiar with a lot of these department secretarial positions in government. The most average American couldn't even name some They have, a lot of them have problems even knowing who Joe Biden is today. So I think we'll continue to educate.
Who's Joe Biden? There's a Joe Biden in government?
Well, I mean, in Obama's government, wasn't there a poll that was
Obama
one of those
who
things those polls on how well you know what's in government, like a third of Americans didn't know who Joe Biden was.
They're missing nothing there. So thank you very much, Richard, for being with us.
All right, thank you.
I'm Gary Noll, and we will keep you up to date. We will, as appointments are made that have to go through Senate confirmation or that are going to be advisors and be making policy, participating in policy decisions, we will let you know what their connections are so we, the people, have a chance to challenge it. It is time for we to realize that neoliberalism is the handmaiden of neo-fascism, and we should say goodbye to both of those, and we should start to protest. Have a nice day, everyone.
Hey, what's up now? Brother, what's up? This is a big party, man. Yeah, I can dig it. Stop right on.